Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1025. Hey, head on over to ID10T.com. We just posted a new shirt that is basically a Jetsons shirt with a Rick and Morty flair that was designed by a friend of ours named Ed Harrington, who runs an amazing pop culture art Instagram account called Nothing Happened Today. And his stuff is amazing. So go to the site. Then check out Ed's stuff. And also, if you're going to be in Irvine, California, November 15, 16, I'll be at the Irvine Improv. And then later in mid-December, I believe what's the date? The 12th, 13th, and 14th, I'll be at the Tacoma Comedy Club in Tacoma, Washington. So ID10T.com for all that stuff, info, tickets, whatnots. But let's talk about you, the ID10T community. Events at ID10T.com, like Bryce, who writes, come to the Chicago Pinball Expo this Thursday through Saturday, October 17th through 19th. You can meet Pat Lawler, who designed your Twilight Zone pinball machine. Twilight Zone's a great pinball machine, by the way. His new game is Willy Wonka. Also, Cassandra Peterson will be there, who, of course, is Elvira. And she's going to be promoting her new pin. Also, she has three of them now, one released in 89, 96, and 2019. Info at pinballexpo.net. I love all of those things. Thank you for sharing that with us, Bryce. This episode is CM Punk, a.k.a. Phil Brooks, who is promoting his new film, Girl on the Third Floor, which is in theaters and on digital platforms October 25th. It's a horror movie, and Phil's the star of it. And I've known him many years back when, you know, he did Talking Dead maybe, oh gosh, season two, I think? Season two or three? And he's a great guy, and we've been friends ever since. And I love him. So here is the ID10T podcast number 1025 with CM Punk or Phil Brooks.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
And then you're just going to move into the walls.
I'm going to do my best to hide on the property.
That's really funny. Yeah, this was just like they had to dig this out. It's a cavity underneath the upstairs.
And what Katie said. Like this wasn't even like...
No, the previous owner said, oh, there's a cavity under there, and we were going to turn it into a wine cellar, but we never did. And so... That wall is concrete, so they jackhammered through that. I put this all on Instagram because it was so fascinating.
Yeah, I remember seeing like all of
it. Yeah. I was hoping there was treasure in here, but it was just dirt. It was just dirt.
But this is the treasure.
We made... That's a great way to start. Treasure.
We're doing the podcast already.
Oh my God.
Doing the show in the green room.
I can't believe how long it's been since you first did Talking Dead. Because some of those pictures from back then, I mean, you look the same.
No, I don't know about that.
But I feel like Norman and I looked like 12-year-olds because when his hair was still short and...
Yeah, I think he's a guy that looks the same all the time, though.
Yeah. But he just, his hair has gotten longer
and
greasier.
We all just
I'll say it
in the best way.
You don't have to say
he's
it.
He's riding the motorcycles.
I don't fault him for it. I'm just saying.
How are you? How's Chicago? What's going on?
I am great. Chicago's great. Still a great place to live.
Yeah.
But I'm dreading the winter.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course. I don't know how anyone survives that. I mean, it's crazy to me that Chicago as a city doesn't just shut down for the winter a la
well,
Stanley Hotel.
It sort of does. I think Illinois as a whole without Chicago would be Indiana. So Chicago should just dome itself off, you know, not to substantiate anybody's need or want for, you know, border walls or anything like that.
I know, but then if you dome it off, doesn't when everyone turns 30, don't they blow them up in a ceremony, Logan's Run style?
Oh, then I should have been killed.
I know.
I should have been killed two years ago.
Very generous.
Yeah. Very. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm really good. Yeah. I was just performing and I emailed you because I was performing in Schaumburg.
Mm-hmm.
And, but of course, it was the same weekend as Riot Fest.
Yes.
Which the lineup looked insane.
Like last. I didn't go to any of it. I went. Rancid played.
Yeah.
And I went more because I'm just friends with those guys.
Yeah.
I'm the old punk rock guy now.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, I don't want to go to concerts. I don't want to go to festivals.
They're loud.
I mean,
crowded.
So Slayer played their last Chicago date supposedly, mm-hmm. right? And they're like, you know, a couple miles from my house, and I was just like, oh, I can't.
Wait, do I have to? Do I have to like put on pants?
15, yeah, precisely. 15-year-old me would be very upset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but that's what happens. It's just so comfortable to be at home. Because I was just talking to my, I was talking to a friend of mine about Bonnaroo because I performed at Bonnaroo one year and.
Is that like Burning Man?
It's in Tennessee. It's outside of Nashville.
Okay.
But it's in the dead of summer in the Tennessee humidity and heat. And. You know, people have said, should I go to Bonnaroo? I go, it's a great festival, but, you know, people do go and I assume they engage in substances all night and then they sleep in these non-ventilated tents, which are just holding in the funk. And I don't know how more people are not taken to the hospital because it's so hot there.
I'm so old now. I'm just thinking about like the locals and the residents who are probably just like.
Well, it's out in the middle of like nowhere.
Okay.
So it's out of town in the middle of a field. So there aren't really.
I hope they're picking up after themselves. I really do.
But when you're young, you'll just dig a hole in the dirt and take a dump and then and then just go right back to the thing you were doing before.
Yep.
And I don't. I just don't have that. It's real hard to motivate us to like, when do we have to go? Okay, we'll go to that. But then we hopefully we'll be home by 10.
And yep.
10's kind of pushing
10's late.
It.
10's late. I got a lot of friends in LA that are texting me like, hey, I know you're here for work, but like, let's hook up. Let's like, you know, let's try to get like dinner. And I'm like, okay, well, what time? They're like 5:00.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, you know, especially with what your stage persona was, you have to go to bed early to maintain that. Like when you see performers, it's like, you know, Rob Zombie still tours always, but he is in great shape. He's vegan. He takes care of himself. And it's like that idea that, you know, the aging rocker, it's like, no, you might be able to have that persona in the world,
it's
but
not,
the maintenance and what you have to do.
It's not realistic. It's not real.
Yeah.
I look back at what I used to do. Like when I go to airports now, I go, oh my, I used to do this every day. And I think about it now. I would die.
You do that. And then you go into an arena and jump on someone's head and get thrown around
more often than not, get my head jumped on and then just do it all over again. And then, you know, I tricked myself into like being in love with like this romantic notion of like, nope, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to do. And like, I was single at the time and I had no obligations. Didn't have a dog, obviously no children. So I was just ripping it up, and by it I mean my body.
Yeah, exactly. Because you feel like you you heal right away, and then it's no big deal. And then now I was telling my I've had the same trainer for like 14 years. And I was telling him it's astonishing how much work you have to do
not just to like get in amazing shape, but just to feel okay. Mm-hmm. The amount of stretching and the amount of like, you know, and still you could go to pick something up and be like, ah, fuck, ah, my shoulder, god damn it, you know.
My warm-ups nowadays are like my old workouts.
Yeah.
I got to warm up enough and then I'm like, oh, I feel great right now. And then I can do everything. Pay for it in the morning. I'll wake up and just be like, oh.
Do you still train pretty hard regularly?
Yeah. Like that was my thing this morning. I knew I had to come here. So I was just like, well, all I got to do is wake up in the morning and I'll go hike. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like to do like whatever's around. When I'm in Chicago, I tend to lift more weights. When I'm in Milwaukee, that's where I train MMA. And then I'm here. So like, I don't have a gym and I don't want to go to a gym to have to talk to somebody at the front desk to do the whole, I just want to work out for the, I literally, I just need 45 minutes.
Right.
Well, you got to talk to Jeff who's, you know, I don't want to talk to Jeff. Can you just take my money? Please let me work out. Yeah. I don't want to do any of that. So it's easier just headphones, shoes, go to Griffith or go to Runyon and just kind of get lost for an hour. So I did that this morning. And that's
why. Do you do shit on the hike? Do you like stop and do sit-ups or push-ups or whatever? You just kind of hike?
Depending on how I feel. Like today was the second day in a row I did it. So I was just like, I'm fine with just running straight up this canyon.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be enough. You know, I essentially did like 5 miles, you know, so.
It took me a long time to learn that I don't need to try to impress anyone in a fitness situation, because my trainer always says, you know, I want you to leave feeling better than when I showed up. And, you know, so I used to punch mitts and stuff. And then after a while, I'm like, well, that hurts my wrists. Why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. I don't need to do this anymore. And then I was doing pull-ups and then I added a weight belt and dropped a 25-pound weight on there. And I was doing pull-ups and I felt awesome. And then I basically sprained my wrists. Because I was pulling up too much weight. And it's like, oh, I don't need to do that. I don't need to do that. Why am I doing that? Who am I doing that for?
You're a competition with yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
You should just with a 1% better.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or at least just, because I always used to say I would work out to try to feel something. And now I work out to try to not feel anything. Because I don't want to have the like, I popped a rib out.
We're Strattler and Waldorf now.
Yeah,
just two old guys.
I love it. But how is MMA training different from wrestling training?
Wrestling training, MMA training is a lot like wrestling training in that I do it every day. So when I was learning how to wrestle and training, I was there every day, just you're beating the crap out of yourself. And then obviously, you know, I learned the job and then I was on the road. So I wasn't training every day, so to speak. I was performing, you know. But MMA training every day is just like, I get obsessed to where I'm like, I try to train like 3 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
I pay for that real
quick. Of course.
Real fast.
Of course.
And then there's... I feel like I'm okay as long as I stay up on it. Like, and I'm talking like doing cryo, like dry needling, massage.
Yeah.
Like if I stay up on that stuff, then I can train 3 times a day. But I'm kind of like you now at this point. Like, why am I training 3 times a day?
Well, because you do step into a ring where someone tries to punch you as hard as they can.
But I'm at a point in my life now where I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm fighting again professionally. Right. You know what I mean? But it's just like I'm still so like in love with learning. You know what I mean? And I still feel like when I go to spar, when I go do jiu-jitsu, like anything, like I'm just learning and I'm there and I'm having fun. And like I just love the process of all of that. It's just my body's betraying me.
Yeah, you know? But that is the best reason to do anything, though. If you like it and it does feel good and it's fun to you, that's enough of a reason. It doesn't – I think when we start out, we feel like everything has to have a specific goal. And it's like, no, you can just do stuff because you like doing it. It doesn't mean that you ever have to step in a ring again. You can still train and enjoy that process.
Well, and I'm not in like a fight camp. Like I don't have a name and a date that I'm staring on the barrel of.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more enjoyable to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to the gym and then I go home. And then if I miss a session – because I fell asleep or I took a nap and I'll just be like, well, I'll just go later or I'll take the day off. I'll take the night off. It's much more enjoyable that way.
How's your diet day to day?
It's terrible.
Because you were the one – first of all, Schomburg is really interesting because they – it's all centered around this giant mall where the Improv is, which is a great club. But there's also like a Kuma's Corner, a Portillo's, like there's all this stuff. And I was like, oh my God, Schaumburger's like Chicago without all the Chicago.
Well, that's like, everyone just started like moving out. Rosemont now is like ridiculous. They have this giant Rosemont, like, I don't know. I think there's a casino there now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Rosemont, by the way, like the most corrupt, the corrupt city in maybe America.
Oh, is it?
They've had two mayors their entire existence. And the one was the dad and the other one was the son.
Okay.
You should Google this. It's weird. The son started some sort of thing where he said after his dad died, he saw his face in a tree. It's like it's...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
But it's blowing up. Rosemont's blowing up.
Whoop, whoop.
So I'm curious because you took me to Kuma's Corner for the first time, which those burgers are insane.
Yeah, it'll ruin you.
So good. And... I'm just like, do you have a, like, what's your set schedule every week for, do you have like a cheat day or do you kind of just eat whatever, but in moderation, it just doesn't matter.
Everything's in moderation. Cause I'm also at the point now where like I could blow it out and I'll just get sick of eating like shit.
Yeah.
I just get tired of it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I can't eat this.
Yeah. I feel that way too.
You know, like, yeah. So it helps, going out to dinner or making food with Ape because, you know, you can share food.
Yeah.
And you can just have, like, if she gets sweet potato fries, I can just have, like, two or three. And I'm like, I'm good.
You're good. Yeah.
I don't think I have the cleanest diet. I think if you looked at it objectively, people would probably, like, slap me in the back of the head and be like, yeah, you eat better than, like, anybody, you know? It's always easier for me to eat clean in the morning. And then I train. And then I'm still, like, a weird night owl to where, like, I am, like, that 12-year-old Phil that I'm like, I don't want to fall asleep because I don't want to miss anything.
Right.
You know? So I still want to stay up late and watch movies. And like, that's when I'm like, I'm going to eat some junk.
Have a snack. Exactly.
It's a lot easier to eat junk at night. And then I got April, who's like trying intermittent fasting. And like, she's always more on point than I am.
What I would like to picture is you in like a onesie footy pajamas, just eating a bowl of Lucky Charms at like 12:30 at night.
It's a lot more
a creature feature.
It's a lot more pornographic than that.
Watching a softcore creature feature.
No, I just meant like, I'm probably just, you know, maybe wearing shorts.
Gotcha. I thought you're like maybe wearing a shirt, no pants. You know, just go eat some cereal, do a little shirt cocking.
Yeah.
Whatever. So she is doing the intermittent fasting because I had heard that Terry Crews has been doing that, and he says, "Oh, I've never felt better in my life." And so
the guy always looks like a fucking $6 million.
He does.
Like,
he looks incredible.
Yeah.
Some of that might just be his own like DNA like perfection. I know he probably puts a lot of work into it, but some people are just like, oh yeah, you're just kind of physically perfect.
Yeah. I know a lot of MMA fighters have never touched like a weight in their life and they just look like little He-Man guys. And I'm just like, you know, I secretly really hate these people.
I'm sure you've probably talked about this or maybe you haven't talked about it. I don't know, but was the jump to MMA fun, scary, weird, what you expected, not what you expected, enjoyable, not enjoyable?
It was all of that, though. It really was all of that. And I think if you're scared of anything, I think that's like one of the best reasons to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's skydiving, right? Why the hell do we as human beings strap a parachute to our back and jump out of planes?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, when you think of it, it's like the stupidest thing in the world, right? Bungee jumping, you know, driving fast cars, like all these things. It's the adrenaline rush, right? So I'm kind of the have you seen Jojo Rabbit yet?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. So it ends with a quote, and I'm not sophisticated enough to know who the author or the poet where the quote came from, and I'll butcher the entire quote, but the beginning of it is, let everything happen to you, you know, joy and terror.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and there's more to the quote. I apologize for butchering it.
That's a good way to say it, because we, in our culture, I think we have romanticized the idea that everything should be amazing and perfect all the time, or just sunny all the time.
Yeah.
And my wife always says, like, no, you don't appreciate the sunny days without the rainy days.
It's pretty weird that, like, even if I'm, like, having a bad day, I can center myself and just be like, you know what? This, like, the end of the quote that they end the movie with is no feeling is final.
Right.
You know, so there's always, there's it ebbs and it flows. There's good days and there's bad days. And yeah, I mean, you know, I challenge any person, anybody who's ever done MMA, if you tell me that you haven't sat in your car in the parking lot of your gym and cried your eyes out, you're just a liar. You know what I mean? And it's just like the camaraderie in my gym is that every single one of us shares those stories together.
Right.
And I've walked out of the gym and I've seen guys sitting in their car and, you know, and they just look up and you just look at them and you just give them the thumbs up. And I've been in the car and, like, you know, and it's just the process. And it's just like you go through that. Why am I doing this?
Right.
Especially me, of all people. Like, why am I doing this?
Yeah. You why know? Do you, at this point, like, why do you need to go jump in the ring? And
because I could, because yeah. I was afforded the fucking opportunity.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, it, you know, it's something that was offered to me and I went, oh, yeah.
Why not
yeah,
try
yeah,
that?
Absolutely. Hey, yeah. you want to drive this really fast, expensive car on this racetrack? Yeah.
Yeah, because okay. You didn't want to. I'm sure you didn't want to, you know, hit 60 or 70 and be like, you know, I should have just done it.
It's the because
now I can't do it. I should have just done it.
That's exactly kind of how I try to just live. You know, I don't want to have the regrets. And I, you know, I honestly can say, knock on wood, that I don't think I have a single one. You know, people always ask me questions about wrestling and, oh, you hate wrestling. And I'm like, no, I don't hate it. I don't regret any of it. Like, I'm focused on doing other stuff.
But you did it.
Yeah, I did it. Yeah. I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah.
You know, if I had a time machine, the only thing I would try to do is go back in time and see bands, you know, and I would still probably fuck up the space-time continuum and disaster would occur. But yeah, I wouldn't try to change anything.
That's good, though. I mean, because it, you know, being able to challenge yourself consistently and not being complacent and, you know, that idea of getting uncomfortable, that growth happens from getting uncomfortable, I'm sure that this experience has probably paid off for you in ways that you never imagined before.
Yeah, and I, you know, and if I'm ever in a situation, zombie apocalypse, hurricane, tornado, earthquake, whatever, I'm comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah. Like
I actually think I thrive in being uncomfortable. You know, I think I've put myself in enough situations where I'm like, well, this sucks, but yeah, you know what? It didn't kill me. I'm alive. So yeah. I can... you know, hopefully handle whatever's coming.
But also I think you're good at handling, because, you know, in these types of whatever, just especially because of social media now, like every sector of everything has its hecklers and its trolls and people shouting at you.
So easy to do, right?
But the CM Punk wrestling character, like, he built his career off, like, he built his identity off, like, kind of being villainous until he was embraced,
yeah.
You know? And so you were, you know, to a degree, I feel like you were sort of, you built up the armor for that and that sort of fed you. Did you find that with MMA? Because I'm sure when it was announced, people were like, oh, what the fuck is this guy think he's fucking doing? Blah, 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 you know?
Right,
and,
right.
And that, I imagine that you were like, okay, that's just sort of fuel for the fire.
Yeah, it's fuel for the fire. I mean, the best thing to do is to not read comments on anything.
Ever.
You know? No, you shouldn't do it. Everybody out there, set your notifications and get rid of everybody that doesn't.
No, on someone's deathbed, then no one's ever going to say, I should have read more comments.
Yeah, or I should have said more shitty things to people with blue check marks on Twitter. Like, that's not ever going to happen. I think, what were we talking about? We were talking about
training, and we were talking about wrestling, and we were talking about all the training and putting into it and appreciating stuff, and then I don't put
the stock in stuff. Like, I think everybody's human, so I think if somebody's yelling at you shitty things, yeah, it could affect you, but at the end of the day, like, I don't put stock in anybody else's opinion because I know who the fuck I am.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Which is the best way. It's a very difficult thing to achieve because you have to be comfortable with your... First of all, you have to know yourself, and then you have to be comfortable with what you know mm-hmm. of yourself. And then if you are able to be cool with that, it's not like... I mean, if someone came up to your face and they're like, you're a fucking piece of shit, you're a human being, of course you're going to be like, oh, why would they, you know? But ultimately, as long as you're able to not define yourself by what other people say about you, then you're probably in, you know, a better condition to navigate this particular timeline that we are in currently, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But how do you define, like, what is your metric for success? Like, how do you personally define success?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think the goalposts are always moving.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned it earlier, you know, being at competition with yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I never tried to have anybody, any certain person that I like looked up to and was like, I need to beat that person, you know, and especially in pro wrestling, you know, cause it's such a strange animal, you know, it's not true competition, but in a way it's the most cutthroat competition because
it's a theatrical popularity contest.
Yes. It's like you going to the neighbor kid's house and he's playing with his toys and he has his favorite toys.
Yep.
And you can't compete with that. You can't tell him, well, this toy is better, because he's going to be like, go fuck yourself.
Right.
Get out of my house.
Right.
But the competition is very, very real. And a lot of people hide behind the guise of the boys. The boys are going to take care of each other, and the boys, the wrestling boys, and we're all brothers. And like, that couldn't be further from the truth. Everybody would sell their own mother for like, you know, for like probably whatever they think their level of success is, because everybody's is different. Whether it's, I just want a main event Madison Square Garden, take my grandmother.
Yeah.
I just need $1 million. You know, like,
it'd be a really weird deal if it was like, okay, you can play here, but I'm going to need your grandmother. All right, well, you know what?
Opening match at the Garden, I'll just take one of her kidneys. All right, Grandma.
She had a good run.
Yeah, you're not long for this earth.
Yeah, she had a good run. She did okay.
So success, you know, it's strange. Being a guy who has been, I will say, unjustly involved in some frivolous lawsuits and just spent some money and panicked because I had to spend this money because it was money I earned.
Mm-hmm.
But then eventually going, yeah, what the fuck do I care? I don't care. I'll make more money tomorrow. And realizing that my success is predicated on waking up every morning and like having an awesome dog and wife to kiss, not necessarily in that order.
Yep.
And that's where I'm at in life right now, where, you know, I'm just like, I don't care what happened, especially right now. Like today, you got me on such a good day. it's been a really good week.
Oh,
and you know,
good.
Like, we're out here kind of a working vacation. I'm hustling, doing stuff for the movie.
For the movie, Girl on the Third Floor.
You know, and I'm working on other stuff, and April's out here working too. So we're like, she's scheduled some meetings, and there's like all these moving parts in our life right now. But like the one thing that isn't moving, it's just like us. She can fuck off and go do her thing, her writing stuff. I can fuck off and go do double runyons and come here. And, you know, at the end of the day, we come back home and form like Voltron, you know?
Double runyons.
Yeah.
that's really funny.
Stupid.
It's a double runyon.
It's a stupid thing to do in the rain, too.
Well, yeah, but it's probably not as crowded because in L.A. we flee like rats whenever there's slight moisture in the air.
That's why I love runyon so much. So I'm like, it's played out and it's – but I love people watching.
Yeah.
People watching and so many dogs.
Yeah.
I'm just like in heaven. Like, it's so great.
Yeah. The last time I was at runyon, I was walking up the hill and these two girls were walking by me, and the only part of their conversation I heard was – one time my friend Heather totally levitated, and that's all I heard. And I was like, this is Runyon Canyon. You know, this is what you.
One of the first times I ever went to Runyon, this has yet to be duplicated. There was a girl who was wearing just underwear, like the smallest of underwear.
Sure.
It was a hot summer day. And she just had saran wrap around her boobs. Like, that was her top.
Sure.
And I was just like, fuck yes. Like, that's what I come here to see. I come here to burn calories and just see this weird shit.
But that's what's weird about it. Because if you go down to, like, Hollywood Boulevard, you'll see a lot of weird stuff. But it's the combination of the it's like outdoorsy weirdness. Like, it's a different type of, I don't quite know how to describe it. They're not shut-ins because they are out at Runyon Canyon, but it does attract an interesting element.
They got to Instagram that shitty skyline at the top, you know what I mean, in their saran wrap, in their saran wrap bra.
Of course. Yeah. Well, I remember, like, after your MMA fight, I wanted to text you and say, like, hey, man, good job for getting in there. But I was like, oh, I don't know if he wants to hear from any. Like, I don't. Are you the type of person that after a fight?
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Or something that you want people to, like, crowding you and being like, hey, good job, or do you just like to be alone and kind of just process?
No, I mean, I'm surrounded and insulated by great people that were, you know, they all said all the right stuff after I lost both times. And, you know, it's just like I said before, like the morning after my fight, like I woke up in my own bed because it was in Chicago, and like Ape's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, let's fucking go get breakfast. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to sit here and think about it. Like, I got to eat. You got to eat. Yeah. Like, I'll go walk Larry and then, you know, we'll go grab some grits somewhere. I don't know. I'm very much the guy. Like, I mean, I got all kinds of messages, you know what I mean? And they're all positive, you know, because again, the people who want to send you negative shit, like they're certainly not going to text me.
Right.
They're, you know, so it's just, why would I bother listening to it anyway?
Also, it's not like, I would imagine the people who would send you negative shit are not like other MMA fighters. You know what I mean? Like other dudes who are in it who understand what the process is. Generally aren't people giving you shit who have nothing to do with the situation. It's like, well, you didn't get in a fucking ring and get punched in the head. What the fuck?
Right.
What are you talking
and
about?
I look at it like this. You know, like my lowest moment, I'll say losing is my lowest moment. Not that I was ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater or anything, but from an outside perspective, like, you know, losing, that sucks. You never want to lose. Yeah. Nobody goes in there and be like, well, I'm going to lose today.
Yeah.
So losing sucks. But like just learning from that loss is like so great because it made me realize like, okay, I got shit to work on.
Right.
You know, I remember losing when I was playing Little League and being like, well, that sucks. And like, you know, coaches be like, well, you got stuff to work on. So it's just like, you just go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's better, especially for people listening who are whatever, if they're going through anything, instead of thinking of things as binaries and winning and losing, if you think of everything as a transaction,
yeah,
you know what? The cost of the process of you getting into the peak physical condition and learning all these things and going through this journey and growing in all these amazing ways, the cost was you lost one fight. But look at all this other stuff you gained. It was just part of the transaction. So what – you know, when you sort of look at it as a spreadsheet and what you learned and how you grew, like that to me is...
It's a total microcosm of life.
Yes.
You know, because nothing ever goes perfect.
Right.
Nobody ever goes into the cage feeling, oh man, I feel great. You interview a fighter, they're going to tell you that. But the truth is, they hurt themselves, you know, sparring week three, you know, and they got 3-4 more weeks of camp left. So it's just like learning how to adapt and work around those things. The 3 weeks leading up to my second fight, the worst 3 weeks of my life. You know what I mean? But it's just like,
because of the anticipation or the anxiety or stress?
No, this is like a weird thing. Is like I never talked about it because I feel like they're all excuses. Mm-hmm. So why talk about it? I think a lot of fighters sometimes do it. Like right after they lost, they're just like, you know, my car broke down the one day and then like my baby's mama got mad at me week four. And then I broke my foot. And
right.
It's just like, there's always reasons. But like, I looked at it like I had the disastrous training camp. It was awful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was literally on trial in Chicago because I had a defamation lawsuit funded by World Wrestling Entertainment, the fight week.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't cut weight properly. I couldn't water load. I couldn't do like all the shit.
So you just weren't you weren't able to focus the way you needed to.
I wasn't able to do anything. I mean, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd do sprints and I would like eat half an avocado and I would go to court, and I couldn't water load to cut weight properly because I had to sit in court for like 8 hours a day, you know, and then I would leave, and then I would train, and I would try to do what I could, like on the back end of the day. I got two really bad eye infections like 2 weeks out.
Oh,
like I couldn't train. Well,
I don't think it's excuses.
Like,
I just think they're data points. You know what I mean? They're just data points.
I think I'm far enough removed from it where I can talk about it. I'm obviously talking about it with you now. And like none of it is an excuse. I got the shit beat out of me. I lost a decision in Chicago. But to me, that's better than pulling out of a fight.
That's the thing,
in Chicago, because I had a very short window in MMA. And I looked at it like, you know, I remember talking to my coaches, and they're just like, look, we still believe in you. You're a tough son of a bitch. You can do this. But, you know, if you had a long career at this, we'd tell you not to fight.
Right.
And I was just like, when am I going to get the chance to fight in Chicago ever again? It's not going to happen.
No, but it is embracing the fact that it was not a perfect 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And you still went in there anyway. Like, and no one was making you. I'm sure it would have been very easy. I mean, I don't know how easy it would have been legally.
If I woke up tomorrow and I pulled out of that fight, I would still be kicking myself.
Of course you would.
I'd still be thinking
about it. Of course
you
would.
But I don't wake up and think about losing every day. I would wake up and think about, oh shit, I didn't do it.
Yeah, because you overcame all this personal stuff and still showed up anyway. I mean,
I won the trial. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was literally like, yes! And I was like, oh, shit, I got to fight in, like, 2 days. Like,
I got to get to the arena.
Yeah, I got to do it again. Like, I literally went from verdict being read to getting in a car to going to Wrigley Field to sing the seventh inning stretch. Like, and I just look like shit, and I'm just like, yeah, go yeah. Cubs, you know, like... But what a wild time. What a great story.
To me, it sounds like nothing but success, personal success, because again, you're doing it for yourself, and look what you went through to do it. You know, like it, my trainer always says, like, no matter how you feel, and this is much smaller of a scale, but no matter how you feel on days where you go to the gym, all you got to do is show up. If you just show up.
No, that's not a smaller scale, though. You know what I mean? Like, to me, everything's, like I said, you're competing with yourself.
Yeah.
So don't say it's a smaller scale. It's what you're doing. It's the challenge you have for that
showing
day.
Up when you know it's going to suck anyway.
Yes.
And just saying, like, I'm just going to do it, and, you know, whatever happens, happens. And if I have to force myself to look for the good in this, then that's what I'm going to do to get through it.
I had some of my best professional wrestling matches when I was just like 102 degree fever. You know what I mean? And there's obviously something to be said that the wrestling business will make you go out there and perform. If you don't work, you don't get paid.
Sure.
You know, but there were for sure moments where, I mean, you know, look, Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls, he very famously has the flu game.
Mm-hmm.
He had the flu. He had a ridiculous fever, and he went out and he had the best game of his career.
What do you think that is?
I think that's there's a lot of preparation in that. I think that is you practicing and then playing like you practice. So if you practice half-ass, but it's just reps, it's just Michael Jordan being who he was and maybe having to dig a little bit deeper, being like, I'm sick, but my team needs me. Let's go do
focusing
this.
Focusing extra because he felt like he was...
Yeah, yeah. And pushing through and mental toughness.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I do think it is good to, if you can just get yourself to show up to things you don't want to do and allowing whatever happened to happen. And some of those workouts where... I you know, and I say to him when I come in, he goes, how are you feeling? And I go, I don't want to be here right now, but I made my legs walk into the gym, and now I'm yours, and just tell me, I'll just listen to whatever you say. And I do whatever he tells me, I let it go. And
that's the easiest way to do it.
Some of those days are like the best. And he goes, so you came in here, and he goes, it was all between your ears because your body has done all the work. So your neck down, you were ready to be here, even though your brain didn't feel like it. And I'm like, fuck, yeah, you're right. If I hadn't shown up today, I wouldn't have had this experience. And I would have just enabled that mythology that, like, oh, this is dumb and I suck and I don't want to fucking do this, you know. And so it's like what bank account do you want to put deposits into, you know?
Yeah.
The growth one or the one where you're just stagnant and hate yourself?
Yeah, and I'll sit in bed all day. Like even now, like days I don't train or do something, I go crazy. And that's when you get still awake at 4 a.m., Phil. Like, I didn't do anything today. And now, you know, now I can't properly go to bed on time. And now everything's going to be screwed up.
So you need the structure.
I don't even know if it's structure. I just need an outlet.
Sure.
I need to do something, whether but I do obsess, you know, like the last couple days in Chicago where I was like, oh crap, it's nice out. I gotta go bike because I'm not gonna be able to bike. You know what I mean?
You gotta grab those days.
Then I'm doing like 40, 50 mile bike rides, you know what I mean? I'm just like, and then I'm paying for it. But it's just that's just who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as long as you know that, you know, and
it makes me successful in everything I've ever done. It's made me rewrite comic books and chapters of things I've written. And it's made me go back to the drawing board so many times and make sure that whatever the finished product is worthy and 100%.
Yeah. And it also helps to have a really amazing partner too, because I know that if I'm stressing about something or caught up in something, Lydia goes, hey, this is probably happening because X, Y, or Z. And I know that normally A, B, or C. And so if you just do this, or if it, you know, I'm like, oh my God,
mm-hmm.
You're right. It is. And I imagine April is probably the same for you.
It's a real life Snickers commercial, you know? She's like, she's like, why are you snapping at me? Did you eat yet? You're hungry. Go eat. Oh, you're right. You're right. Thank you.
You're not drinking enough water. You need to hydrate.
Thank you, dear.
Yeah.
Legit, the water thing. You're dehydrated. Go drink water. All right, sorry.
It's crazy. Like yesterday, I, you know, for whatever reason, I just felt really sad and depressed for a couple hours.
Happens.
And then Lydia was like, drink some water. And I drank like two boxes, because she gets boxed water. So I drank two boxes of water. And almost instantly I was like, oh, I think I feel better. How many things did I think were emotional in origin that were just physiological in origin? And I wouldn't have realized that if this amazing person in my life didn't go, just fucking drink water.
Yeah. Or like when I'm super crappy, like whatever, and April does that. She's like, you need to eat. Like, let's get some food in you.
Shut up. You don't know.
And then I eat and I feel like a blossoming flower all of a sudden. Like I eat and I'm just like, oh, like all of a sudden my body comes back to life. And I'm like, oh.
But
that
is really trying to understand the mind-body connection and not ever putting too many eggs in either basket. That it is trying to figure out that balance between, you know, what things are actually really happening in life, what things you're creating, and what negative things you're creating because you haven't exercised in a few days, or you're starting to get sick, or you didn't sleep, or you didn't eat, or you didn't drink. And just, you know, it's obviously not everything is going to fall into that camp, but in as much as you can trim as much of that stuff back as you can, why wouldn't you if you could?
Mm-hmm.
What is your, like, do you have a, I need to drink X, like, this amount of water per day? Are you that regimented, or are you just kind of?
No, I think the only regimented thing I do is I'm the one who predominantly walks Larry.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll wake up first and I drink two giant glasses of water with like a little bit of lemon juice in it,
mm-hmm.
Get a black cup of coffee, and me and Larry go out and we do that. And then like, that's the start of my day. And that's really about the only uniform thing. Obviously when I'm traveling, it's completely different. But we brought Larry with us, so he's out here. So it's pretty uniform. And then I try to train first thing. So sometimes it's empty stomach. Sometimes it's oatmeal and fruit. And then I'm off to the races.
How do you train with an empty stomach? Because those are the times when I have to eat. If I don't eat at least an hour and a half before, and maybe a handful of almonds at the workout, I don't feel good.
I'm not doing much. You know, like I got a gym in my basement in Chicago. So if I'm training on an empty stomach, I'm just doing some light cardio.
Gotcha.
I'm not.
Just to move.
Yeah, just to kind of start the day that way. And then, you know, I'll train again later.
That's good. Yeah, as long as you can check the box in your head.
Yes.
You know, not every day. It's like you're not going to remember every workout that you ever had, but the sum total of showing up all those times.
And days where I'm super busy.
Yeah.
That's the key, is like, that's how I start my day. So even if I do 20, 30 minutes on a bike, or I'm just moving around shadow boxing and just keeping it light to start the day, and then I know maybe I'll be able to fudge some stuff around later in the day and get into a gym or go on a bike ride or do whatever. But if I can get the one out of the way mentally, then I won't be 4 a.m. awake, Phil, being like, you know, playing Friday the 13th on the Xbox till like 8 in the morning, just being like,
bleh. Is that what you're playing right now?
That's about all I play. That's like it. Yeah. The whole reason I have an Xbox, April bought me the Xbox because of the Friday the 13th game.
And have you, I haven't played it yet. Do you play terrible. As Jason?
You can be Jason or Counselor. So the lobby is somebody's Jason, and I think there's six or seven people that are counselors. So if you're a counselor, you either like all in, try to kill Jason, or you can escape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then if you're Jason, you're just killing fools.
Now, do you in the game? Do you stop for a lovemaking break where he jams a spike through both of you, or is that not okay?
No. All right.
Well, that would have been more accurate to the film series.
The developers have like completely abandoned the game because there's a lawsuit about who owns the rights to Jason. I don't know what it is, so they can't make any new content. So when I say they abandoned the game, they're just like, whatever. So there's like crazy like glitches in the game that people exploit, and they hide on the roof. Like the counselors will hide on the roof and Jason can't get them. And it's just like, it's just the wild, wild west. But I still, it's just the content is the reason I play the game.
Do you network with other people, or do you play alone?
No, it's more of a, got a group of people who I play with.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. That's the fun of it. You know, you can get in the car and you try to run each other over, and I'm probably a bastard when I play, but you know,
I always say when in doubt, when something with something that you enjoy, if it didn't turn out the way you wanted, or if something happens with it, like you're saying, the glitches, there's usually a legal reason. There's usually a business affairs situation going on behind it. Because I saw these Freddy Krueger Nike SB low tops online. And then I was like, oh, I want to get a pair of these. These are red. And they're like $18,000. So I didn't buy them. But I read the story about them, that in 2007, Nike was going to release this horror line of shoes. But I guess it was just inspired by. So they made these Freddy Krueger inspired by shoes, but they weren't official licensed gear. And I guess, who was the studio? Maybe New Line? Someone was like, oh, we own the – we have trademarked Freddy's sweater pattern. So you can't have that on a shoe. And so they recalled all these shoes. But like one vendor in Mexico had already started selling them, but the rest had been ordered to be destroyed. And the people who destroyed the shoes apparently just like pocketed a handful. So there's only a handful of these amazing Freddy Krueger SB Nikes in the world, and they're like $18,000. And again, it's illegal. You know, it was like a legal thing. You know, we can't have nice things.
There's nothing worse than lawyers. There's nothing worse than.
Well, they do their jobs. You know, that's what they're supposed to do. But you know, it can be a little dicey.
Yeah.
And it only takes, I always say, a handful of assholes ruin everything for everyone in the world.
Yes.
A handful. This is why we have locks on our doors. This is why we have two-factor authentication. This is like just because a handful of assholes will walk into your place and take your shit. A handful of assholes. And that's how lawyers sort of build their business. That's why contracts are 100 pages long.
Yep.
Because you're just looking at a diary of a handful of assholes for every situation.
Yep.
Who have fucked something up for someone.
For everyone. Yes. Yes.
Are you collecting anything now?
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Know you the last time I was at your place, you had a flux capacitor.
Yeah.
Has that expanded in any way?
I'm still kind of, I'm just behind on everything. You know, I still get Funkos. I realize they just have like every license in the world now. They just come out. I mean, there's Scarface Funkos, Godfather Funkos, So when I realize they've come out with a bunch of something that has subject matter that I enjoy, I'll buy them. But
you're going to get a very special Chris Hardwick bloody Funko before you leave today.
Do you have a Funko?
I do.
You have your own Funko?
I have two, and I'm very excited about it.
Wow.
It was a career, like,
yeah, it's cool, right? I mean, you know, it's funny that, so my wife has one.
Mm-hmm.
I have one. My dog doesn't have one, but he's named after the Wolfman. There is a Wolfman Funko, so we have the three of us.
Oh, sitting. That's great.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
I love it so much.
Yeah, so I'm gonna get it and sign it to fill my number one fan.
Please. Please. Now you have to. Now you have to.
Now I have to do that obnoxious thing.
But collecting stuff, you know, I don't know. I got a bunch of cool busts, but there's nothing that I have like a super hot fever about, I think, anymore. I read comic books. I read it for the content and the subject matter. I'm not obsessed with trying to go back and get like Amazing Fantasy number 15 or anything
right.
like that. You know, I'm just interested in the stuff that I like, and if I see something I like, I'll buy it. If I went crazy like you, oof, man.
Well, I just
got a ton of cool shit.
I have a ton of shit that, you know, someday I will have to deal with and figure out what to do with. But for now, we're just like furnishing.
It's like Guillermo del Toro. He has an entire house. He bought a whole other house for all his shit because his wife was eventually like, "You got it."
And that's where I consider myself. That's one of the many ways that I consider myself so lucky, because my wife collects just as much of that stuff as I
awesome.
Do. So she collects. So when people come in and they see her, like, the horror stuff that's in our house, they go, "Your wife let you keep this in here?" I go, "This is hers.
Yeah.
This isn't mine." You know, like, I collect mainly the Disney stuff and the comedy props, and she collects the horror stuff. So the Gremlins are hers. You know, the Howling, the Reagan doll from Exorcist, like, that's all hers.
So awesome.
You know, so it is.
You guys got a lot of cool shit.
We have a lot of fun, weird stuff. But I do feel bad for, you know, that there are some people who have to, like, you know, shamefully hide their stuff from their family. Because the family's like, "Please, no more. You can't. We have to live, you know." But when you are a collector, it is just a part of you, just like having
there's a
it board,
there's a line though. He's a collector, and then the thin line in the
hoarder.
Next hoarder. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Well, hoarding is like, we went to Universal, we went to Halloween Horror Nights and brought home every napkin, every ticket stub, every you know, because there's just too many things. And then ultimately, you know, you do end up, it does feel like a weird Twilight Zone episode where your pile of shit falls on and kills you, and it's like he was consumed by his own.
I think everybody can go home and just throw out a bunch of shit.
They can sort of Marie Kondo their lives, and you know, and I feel like most things, I don't even think that most things bring you joy. I think the acquisition of things brings you joy, the hunting and the gathering and the, "Oh, I tracked down this very weird, rare thing, and now I have it." But on a day-to-day basis, I feel like not that many things go, "Oh my God, I'm so joyful that I have this." It was like, "Oh, that was really fun to get at an auction, or really fun to find in a store. Oh my God,
you have the process."
The process, you know? It really does. I think that's the sort of, you know, the evolution of maturity is becoming process-oriented as opposed to, you know, result and goal-oriented. Because, you know, like, goals are achieved in a second. Now I have this thing.
Right. I mean,
now what happens?
Internet, right? Click a button and you're like, "Oh, I own this now." But yeah, I would much rather, like, I love going to auctions and antiquing with April. You know, just walking around and just finding a gem.
Oh, I bet Chicago has some great antique stuff,
they
too.
They do. They really do. They got a lot of great places. I bought a love tester machine.
Oh, wow.
For April, for one of our anniversaries. Yeah, and it was like one of those things. It was like they were giving it away pretty cheap, I thought. And I was just like, "Well, I got to buy that." But I got to rewire it. It's old. It still works, but like the wiring's all shot. I got to fix that up.
Maybe the next project in your life is an antiquing show.
I don't know, man.
CM Punk's Antique Roadshow. Someone brings you something, you're like, "This isn't worth anything," and then you just smash it and then hand it back to him.
It's like Grammar Slam. Breaking shit over people's heads.
I remember Grammar Slam.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. That was so much fun.
There's a rumor I might be doing some, I don't know, maybe Sunday or Monday, just for like to promote the movie.
Some grammar slams?
Maybe, you know. Obviously, it'll probably be out before this podcast. So
that is spectacular.
Yeah, it could be. I'm hoping it will be.
I mean, I do think that the appreciation of grammar and the enforcement of grammar through slamming is a good way to go, because we are just an autocorrect society now. And I actually have an app installed on my computer called Grammarly. And Grammarly actually, much like spell check, will
just fixes everything for you.
Will offer suggestions to your grammar and say, you know, but we speak very colloquially.
Yeah.
English is such a sloppy colloquial language that that half the time I'm like, no, I really did mean to say that, because that just sounds more conversational. But in general, Grammarly is really great, and it does. And you can, if you write a whole document, there's an app where you can drag the document in, and it will give you like a score of like, you know, here's everything and these articles, and you don't need a comma here and put a comma here, and that's not where you
should
put a semicolon.
You don't got to do anything yourself anymore.
No, you really don't. Fuck you really it. Don't. You know what? Because we don't really have to carry information around anymore or do much for ourselves, it's left a lot more room for things like anxiety and depression.
Yeah, yeah. You know, to fill the void with void.
Because your brain needs to engage in something, so it just, when it's not consuming resources for to live in the world, it just like turns inward and then just starts consuming you for protein. So, you know, maybe there is a thing to like turning off spell check, turning off autocorrect, turning off everything to force yourself to have to.
Well, you know what sucks is being the grammar slam guy. Like anytime I make a mistake,
oh,
and
yeah,
spell something wrong, yeah, like I get so mad.
Well, if you make a your mistake, then yeah, people like. But you know the good thing about it is like, yeah, that I fucked that up.
Yeah,
you know what? I own it.
It's not the end of the world.
It happens sometimes. It is definitely not the end of the world. But it's important that, you know, I think you being able to embrace antiquing and grammar and stuff like that is just good for your soul.
Yeah.
Maybe someday you'll open an antique store. No. Maybe that's your thing.
No.
No?
No, that won't happen.
Okay. I think about it sometimes.
Really? I mean, you could do it. I mean, but you got a lot of cool, expensive shit.
Yeah, but I go – but one of the things I do when I travel and when I go to other cities is I find like local donuts, local pizza, maybe a local burger, just like some local food, and then the antique scene to see what's there. And I see, you know, like I see someone just kind of sitting behind an antique roll-top desk with their laptop open, and this is all their antique stuff. And I sort of feel like, you know, maybe they'll sell it, maybe they won't. They're just happy to be there, and I understand it. I go, I could see that someday. You know, much in the same way that Lydia someday is like, oh, let's just move out to a ranch and have goats. I understand that too.
Sounds, it's just that like, sounds magical.
You just strip all the other garbage away and simplify, and then just go, you know, just live in your own little bubble.
Yeah, your own goat community.
I mean, do you think you'll do that someday?
I don't know. I love my house in Chicago, but we very much have the conversation that it isn't our house. You know, I bought it.
Oh,
and
right.
Moved her into it.
Yeah.
So there is the talk every once and again where she's just like, this place is a death trap. You know, you can't have kids in this house.
Right.
You know, and I go, well, tell me when you're ready to have kids, and I'll buy whatever house you want. You know, like we'll figure it out. We'll make it work. So there's you know, there's talk of looking for a place out here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if one of she's got so many irons and different fires right now that if something hits, there's a chance she might have to be in a writer's room every day.
Right.
You know, so it's just like, get a place here. We got a place in Chicago. I have my place in Milwaukee for training. But you know, that's not a summer home. It's just like, oh, you bought a place somewhere colder than Chicago.
Oh my God, I'd love it if you moved out here. It'd be so fun.
So, you know, we look, and she's obsessed with like realtor.com, constantly sending me. I probably can pull my phone out right now, and she has probably sent me 10 listings of places out here.
I think interest rates are dropping.
You know, I just auditioned for something that might require me to be out here a lot more frequently. So it's, you know.
How's acting been? I mean, it's weird, you know. I guess I shouldn't say how's acting been, because wrestling is basically an acting exercise.
Yeah, like it's theater. You said it earlier. Theater is a good way to put it.
It's scripted, it's improvisational.
People get mad when I call it fake, like, and I tell them to just grow the fuck up.
Wait, it's like yeah, but for people who do that, that's like, you know, going to see a Broadway play and going, oh, this is fake, this wasn't real. Like, I know, but that's, you go to see that knowing
Here's
the art behind it.
Here's my argument with people who say that as a defense. I don't think you should be defending pro wrestling. Like, that's not your hill to die on, saying that it's not fake. Like, that, don't say the F word. Like, I think you should just let that roll off your back. Like,
right.
who cares?
If you enjoy it, great.
I'm not saying it with a negative connotation. I'm just being honest. Like, yeah. It's coming from authority. I lived it.
You know it.
I was there.
Yeah.
It
was just, you can say that.
Yeah. Does it beat you up? Yes. But you know who's winning and who's losing, you know? But, you know, when Al Pacino, when Scarface came out, and Al Pacino had to, you know, go do a podcast.
Yeah.
He didn't show up as Tony Montana.
Right.
And he wasn't, like, you know, talking in his amazing Cuban accent.
Right.
He was Al Pacino, and they talked about the movie he did. You know, he wasn't trying to, you know, he wasn't trying to be Scarface, and he wasn't trying to push the narrative that, like, no, this is who he is.
Yeah.
In pro wrestling, that's what they do.
Yeah.
That's what we used to do. Be like, no, I'm this, you know, like, I hate America, you know, like, whatever the fuck it is. Like, so when the cameras are off, they still very much tried to push that. So it's fucking strange.
Yeah.
Right? It's fucking weird.
Well, because I guess maybe some of it also has to do with, I do think there's a difference between television and film,
mm-hmm.
you know, and theater. Like television, people, I think, form more intimate bonds with television because it comes into that. Well, now, you know, people watch movies at home. But I mean, traditionally,
Because the actors will play characters for an extended period
of
time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It's serialized.
Instead of just like one movie or, you know, whatever, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark.
Right.
Right. But eventually, he's dead now. Spoiler alert.
Oh, fuck, what?
You know, he's going to move on to do other stuff. You know, so yeah, I mean, I get that. You're in the person's house every week. I mean, I was on the road. I signed in 2005 and I left, 2013? That's a long time.
Yeah, that's a good long run.
Susan Lucci-esque, you know, just playing the same character.
People have often said you're the Susan Lucci of pro wrestling.
Yeah, you know, I didn't win no fucking awards either, you know? Let's go.
Always a bridesmaid.
Yeah. But yeah, so just being comfortable, I think acting is a lot easier in the sense that I could do it multiple takes on something,
mm-hmm.
you know, live TV is a different animal.
Yeah.
You know, so I was comfortable because I mean, let's be honest, like last summer I shot two movies, you know, one, I have a smaller part in the Saska Twins, mm-hmm. Cronenberg remake of Rabid, which is fucking bonkers.
That's incredible.
Everybody needs to go see that too, because yes, it is a remake, but it's, you know, it's a remake in the same way that Cronenberg's The Fly was a remake.
Right.
It's a remake in the same way that Carpenter's The Thing was a remake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a movie called The Thing before it, but it's just completely different, remade in their image, and it's a fucking amazing. It's an amazing movie that I feel fortunate to have been a part of.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just like, to me, my job is to show up, and the role I had, I took very seriously, but I also looked at it like, all right, I'm not Laurence Olivier here. I don't have to carry anything. So I'm going to go give them what I think, you know, I'll talk to them. What do you want from me? And then I'll go give them something. And then you get to look at them and go, huh?
is this kind of what you wanted?
You know, and then they have the knobs and they can turn it, you know, volume up, down, contrast, whatever. Say, no, do this differently. Say it this way. Or it was great. Just do it again. You know, do it again a couple times. With Girl on the Third Floor, I was the lead. So there was a little bit of, what the fuck are they thinking? You know, I don't have any movie experience where I'm the lead. So what the hell are they thinking? But this is a cool thing. when you talk, you asked me what's the definition of success, and I said the goalposts are always moving. This is a definition of success. Hey, why did you guys offer me this? You know, we're like 4 weeks into, you know, shooting, and we're just like, you know, now you know everybody, and you know, they've seen you walk around the set in your underwear, and you're like, hey, why me? And they're like, oh, Bobcat Goldthwait recommended you.
Oh, that's great.
So it's just like, that's success.
Yeah.
You know, he directed me in a couple episodes of Marin, and they were looking for,
I love Bobcat,
a Chicago. Girl in the Third Floor is very, it's very Chicago without being like over the top,
mm-hmm.
like Ferris Bueller. Here's all the famous Chicago paintings. Here's all the famous Chicago landmarks.
Right.
You know, but it is a Chicago movie, simply for the fact that it's filmed in a suburb of Chicago. I'm in it. I'm a Chicago guy. And Steve Albini, very Chicago guy, does the score.
Okay.
So yeah, that's how it came to be, and I was just like, oh wow, I gotta send him some chocolate or some flowers or something, because I guess I owe him, you know.
I mean, I wonder. This is probably a stupid question, but when you're training for MMA, you have you know what you're supposed to do to prepare. It's very regimented. But the thing that's hard for me to wrap my head around with acting is like, how do you know? I mean, I guess you learn your lines, but it feels a little more amorphous in that way, where you're like, I think I'm prepared. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I guess they'll tell me when
very
I get
much
there.
So. And the first, I want to say, 2 weeks of shooting, it was me and a dog. I did not have anybody to play with. and I'm the lead. So when I tell you 85% of this movie is my fucking face, oh. I mean, if you don't like Phil Brooks, I, you know, this is a bad way to pitch to go see this movie, but don't go see this movie, because it's the way it's shot. It's, you know, it's me doing home improvement stuff. So I'm drilling and sawing.
Yeah, you're rehabbing a house.
Drywalling, and a lot of it, you know, there'll be a shot from inside the wall of just like my face, you know, like tinkering, and it was wild. So like I would do a shot with this dog, you know, and he'd be like, cut. And I would look at Travis and I'd be like, eh? You know? And he'd be like, great, we're moving on. And I was like, I'd be like, really? Wow, this acting thing's really easy, you know? And then there were some pretty challenging things, you know, that, you know, the night before I'm like reading the sides and I'm like kind of panicking about like, can I do this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to replicate genuine emotion, you know, to laugh, I think's pretty easy. To cry, to show fear and terror, like, shit, can I do this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, and if I can't, how do you learn how to do that? You know, but I think some of the night shoots when we were out there for like, you know, 12, 14 hours, I think that kind of helped break me down to be like,
just, yeah, don't drink water.
I'm miserable enough. You know, yeah, I can drum up some tears really easy right now.
Just think of those times outside the MMA training gym in your car.
Yeah.
Where your spirit was shredded.
Yeah.
And,
draw from that. Yeah.
So what, first of all, you look great. And you seem great, and you seem happy, and I'm so – that makes me very happy.
Good.
And but what else are you joyful about? Like, what are you excited about right now?
I'm excited about the movie, obviously. I'm excited that my wife's killing it, doing so many crazy, amazing things. Her writing partners, she's kidnapped my friend Amy Garcia. They're best friends now. And they look eerily alike. It kind of creeps me out. What else am I excited about? I'm excited about October, you know, because October to me is, you know, this movie is, it's got a big premiere here at Beyond Fest. It's got a big premiere at a Brooklyn Film Festival. And they're doing a big film debut or film fest, Chicago Film Festival is in October. So my October is like jam-packed of me, you know, smiling and being like, here's my movie, guys. I hope you like it. But I'm genuinely very excited about it because I back this movie 100%. It's not like I just signed up to do this movie. I fell in love with the process of doing it. And I was surrounded by tremendously talented people who, on a small budget, I think made a beautiful film that is equally scary, but also will make you think. October is El Camino.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Super. I think that's the 11th, maybe?
It is the 11th. Yeah. I'm stoked for that. I know you've already seen Joker. I'm stoked for that.
Yep.
I'm stoked for hockey. October is all about hockey. Halloween.
Halloween
is my favorite holiday. So.
Do you get trick-or-treaters?
No.
No.
No. Busy street.
Oh, yeah.
So, no trick-or-treaters. My house is also strange that you wouldn't know it is there. You wouldn't know to knock on the door and think somebody was going to answer.
Right, right, right.
What else am I excited about? You put me on the spot.
Yeah, come on. Let's throw on some excitement.
It's all October right now. I just love October so much.
We do, too.
Fall's my favorite. Changing leaves. The weather. Just super stoked about it. Selfishly, my birthday is at the end of October, so you know that'll be cool, I'm sure. But no, it's just, to me, it's just about celebrating life.
Nice.
As corny as it sounds, you know what I mean? Like, what's your favorite holiday? My favorite holiday is the one where strangers give you fucking candy.
Well, that's it, because it you know, at the end of the day, those moments of joy, kind of, you know, pushing everything else aside, and what are you left with? Like, I think that's what life is. Instead of chasing all the external stuff, it's like, and that's all fine. It's fun. It's fun to do fun things, and it's fun to acquire fun things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, who are you? Are you happy with yourself? Do you like yourself? Are you comfortable with you? You know, like, can you be alone and with people? Do you enjoy your immediate circle? Like, I think that's where all the success stuff is.
I mean, my immediate circle is great. You know, and I have, I don't know, maybe three group texts, you know, like thread or whatever, whatever you call them.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's four of us in one, four of us in another, and then like my family one. And my family one's huge because it's like mom, and then there's three sisters, and then the brother-in-law, and like two brother-in-law. It's just, it's big, and it's ridiculous. But, you know, my buddy Ace is in the process of getting his dream job, and he just ended a rotten relationship, and he's already progressed and moved on into a new one. And like I said, his dream job. So he's moving, and I'm stoked for him. The most, my buddy Cliff, who's had a rough go of it a couple of years. Dude was working at Amazon and was killing himself working at Amazon, has now moved to Vegas and has a tremendous opportunity doing something he enjoys. You know, so I'm happy when my friends and my family are happy, you know, and right now everybody's killing it, knock on wood. I'm not the guy that like looks for the storm clouds. I'm just extremely grateful for the great times.
That's good. And then sort of pushing through adversity, what advice do you have for people? You know, because you've been through stuff. You know, you said your friends have been through stuff. And things do ultimately normalize and turn and get through it. So what is your sort of, for anyone who's trying to push through something and feels like, oh, they're in an infinite pit that's never gonna, you know, subside?
So I think social media sucks, but one of the fun things about Instagram is there's so many of those positive pages that will give you like all these crazy positive quotes.
Yeah.
And like you can laugh it off and be like, nah, it's corny. And it is.
I love it. My wife sends it to me all the time.
But like, how great? Right?
Yeah.
Like, how great is it? Because you can either read the comments and, you know, you could believe that you're this piece of shit that some fucking dork kid in England think, you know what I mean? Like, thinks you are. Or you could just read these positive things and, like, realize that, like, yeah, that shit's true. Positive thinking, PMA, I think visualizing and just being positive about shit and putting stuff into the universe, and I think it comes back to you. It's a Winston Churchill quote. It's been one of my favorites. And it's, if you're going through hell, keep going.
That's the best.
Because eventually, you're going to be on the other side of it. You could be halfway done. You know, the tank you're driving through hell could be 78% of the way there, and it sucks. Yeah, but if you go, oh, I'm going to turn back, it's a longer road to hoe to get back than if you would have just kept going. The sunshine's like right around the corner.
Phil, I love you. I appreciate you. I am so glad that you came here. And I'm so happy for your movie. And of course, as a horror fan, I'm very excited to see it.
It is, can I plug it?
Plug the shit out of it. Yeah.
I always feel so corny.
You're not. No, this is the, you know, this is what, this is part of the drill, though.
Yes.
When if you're gonna do movies,
I know
you gotta. I know. You have to be okay with saying, "Hey, I did a movie."
I know. Hey, everybody, put me in your movie. and it's out everywhere, video on demand, on the 25th of October.
Girl on the Third Floor.
Girl on the Third Floor. If you know anything, if you know who Travis Stevens is, like if you have you seen Udarowski's Dune?
No, we never saw it actually.
So the whole animus of me starting to do this is like I've been offered movie roles, and I know we got to wrap.
No, it's fine. You're fine.
I've been offered. Hey, we want you to watch the movie. Yeah, okay, great. Oh, we're still waiting on the money. Yeah, okay, great. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
It's just, you know. So this one came along, and I almost treated it the same way, where I was just like, yeah, sounds great. Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, whatever. And then when I realized it's like it was MPI, Dark Sky, like these real companies, I was like, wait, MPI, like Dark Shadows MPI, you know, like, okay, wait, so who wrote and directed it? Travis Stevens. Oh, let me plug that into the Google. Travis Stevens. First thing that comes up is Udarowski's Dune. It's an amazing documentary about the making of the movie,
right?
Dune.
No, I know what it is. I don't know. We haven't seen it.
And literally based on that, I was just like, oh, so this guy's legit. He knows what he's doing. And then, oh, by the way, Steve Albini's doing the soundtrack. What? You know, you're just like, huh? Okay. And then like, it just all made sense. Like I was almost in before I even read a script. And then I read the script and I was just like, man, this is great. Like it's got a message. It's weird and it's fucked up and there's some really strong female characters in it. And like, I, in a way got to, role reverse and sort of be a final girl.
Mm-hmm.
it's really hard to explain. You got to go see it. It's everywhere. October 25th, video on demand. It will be in select theaters right now. LA, Chicago, New York.
Great.
I know El Paso, Alamo Drafthouse is just started selling tickets. So obviously as demand picks up in the coming weeks, it'll be in other theaters and stuff like that. And you can of course hit up your local theater and be like, we want to see Girl on the Third Floor. And, you know, they'll be forced by violence to put the movie on.
I think a theater would be like, someone wants to come to our theater, but whatever you want.
Yeah. Oh, great.
People don't go to movie theaters that often anymore when they don't have to.
And then the Rabid from the Saskas, I know when it's coming out, but I can't tell.
Okay. But it'll, it just,
that's
going to
be, it'll be 2020.
Okay.
Yeah. Early,
okay.
Early 2020. And then, you know, you never know when you'll see me. I'm always doing something.
Great. Oh, I got to go back and watch the original Rabbit again. It's been a long time. That movie fucking freaked the shit. Even the trailer for that movie when I was a kid.
This one.
Like freaked the shit out of me.
Yeah, this one will get you.
Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you for being here, Phil.
Thank you for having me.
The end.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now, I'm coming back as a judge and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, The Competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully, no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.